This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, September 7th, 2011. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry and 9/11. It was a rare moment in American culture. We'd been attacked, the country was stunned, and maybe for the first time in living memory, there was a public hunger for poetry. In New York City, poems were posted on walls and poles and fences. People around the country emailed poems to one another. Readings were held. Poems were read on the radio. On NPR, Scott Simon read one of the poems that circulated widely in those days, W.H. Auden's response to the beginning of World War II, September 1st, 1939.
Waves of anger and fear circulate over the bright and darkened lands of the earth, obsessing our private lives. The unmentionable odor of death offends the September night.
Another poem that caught on was Try to Praise the Mutilated World by the Polish poet Adam Zagajewski. Claire Kavanaugh's translation of the poem was published right after September 11th in The New Yorker.
You've seen the refugees going nowhere. You've heard the executioners sing joyfully. You should praise the mutilated world.
Both poems had nothing explicitly to do with 9/11, but were repurposed by the mood of the moment into poems that will always be associated with it. Here to talk about why, and poetry's brief moment in the sun, is Abigail Deutsch. Abby was the winner of Poetry Magazine's 2010 Editor's Prize for Reviewing, and she has written about poetry in the wake of 9/11. Abby, we're about to mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and a lot of New Yorkers and people around the country are going to be talking about where they were that terrible morning. I was in the East Village watching the towers fall from the roof of my building with thousands of others who were on their roofs in the East Village. Where were you?
I was in my senior year at Stuyvesant High School, which was about 4 or 5 blocks north of the World Trade Center.
Very close.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, we spent much of the morning inside, afraid and confused. It was pretty hard to figure out what was going on. When one of the towers fell, we lost power, so we had no access to news. So strangely enough, people miles away knew that the towers had fallen, knew what was going on. We inside the building 5 blocks away did not know that any of that had happened. And in fact, when we evacuated, I remember looking back, seeing a dust cloud and not understanding what it was and thinking that I could still see 70 floors of a building, and just the top was obscured by smoke. In fact, there was nothing there at all, just the smoke. I then walked north for over a mile, took refuge in a friend's grandmother's apartment, and eventually, when subway started up again, made it home. And one striking element of my return home was that I started writing poems, actually on the bus. I just took out my notebook and started writing poems. I'm not sure why.
Well, I think a lot of people felt that way. It wasn't just the writing of poems, but the reading of poems. I don't think I'm mistaken to say that that was a real moment for poetry.
For sure.
That was quite unusual. Why do you suppose that is? What was that particular moment, and why did that bring out a longing for poetry?
Well, there's an idea that we yearn for poetry at these pivotal moments, at marriages, at funerals. We entered a paradoxical relationship with language in that moment, where we felt at once as though we couldn't talk about this at all because we didn't have language for it, because it was an unknown type of event. It was such a shock in so many different ways. And then again, we had something to talk about. Something large had happened that demanded discussion and reporting and poetry. And I think perhaps poetry, because it proceeds through implication a lot of the time, might be an appropriate form for that kind of communication, that there's a lot that is not said. And I think that's part of why we were able to repurpose poems so successfully. September 1st, 1939 says nothing about the World Trade Center, but because of the way we interact with poetry, we were able to understand that poem in a metaphorical way, to say that historical event was a metaphor for this one.
I remember that poem felt like it really spoke to us at that moment. I remember that it's as if we had so much free-floating meaning that needed to attach to something.
I think it was part of our vast confusion and disorientation that enabled us and prompted us to latch onto things like that.
And one of the unusual things about it is that Polish poetry seemed to fulfill a certain need. Explain that, if you would, a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, the first poem that the New Yorker published after September 11th was Try to Praise the Mutilated World, which we were just listening to.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Review of Books quickly published poems by Milos.
And then Szymborska became very popular. And then, I don't know, there's a couple of them all at the same time.
That's right. And she actually wrote a poem for September 11th.
Yeah, Photograph from September 11th.
Yeah.
They jumped from the burning floors. One, two, a few more, higher, lower. The photograph halted them in life and now keeps them above the earth, toward the earth. Each is still complete, with a particular face and blood well hidden. There's enough time for hair to come loose, for keys and coins to fall from pockets. They're still within the air's reach, within the compass of places that have just now opened. I can do only two things for them. Describe this flight, and not add a last line.
Why Polish poetry? What was the attraction there? Why not, I don't know, Spanish poetry?
Right. It's a good question. And I think there are various explanations we could look to. One is that an awful lot of these Polish poems concern themselves with apocalyptic moments of history. There was a sense that perhaps American poets hadn't dealt so directly with this sort of event, but Polish poets had. So there is this affinity of subject matter. And then there is also something stylistic, I suspect, that these poems felt on average a bit more accessible than the poems one would usually see in the New Yorker, the New York Review of Books, poetry magazine, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And that if there is a vast public outcry for poetry, then the best way to fulfill the needs that were making themselves known at the time was to provide more accessible poems that more people would more easily get into.
Mm-hmm. So we had the sudden popularity of a couple of Polish poems and Auden's poem and some other things as well. I think The House on the Hill by E.A. Edward Arlington Robinson also circulated quite widely at the time. And then contemporary American poets had to respond. And what happened with that? I don't have any memorable poems in my head by an American poet about 9/11. Do you?
So there were a couple of anthologies that I was able to get my hands on. One was called Poetry After 9/11, an anthology of New York poets. And another was called September 11th, 2001, American Writers Respond.
Mm-hmm.
And these had some good poems in them, though it's true that none of them really grasped us in the same way that those older poems seemed to, or those poems that weren't actually about September 11th.
Yeah, none of them have been quite as memorable, and we associate with the moment.
That's right. Although I don't want to give the impression that no good poems were written about September 11th. A favorite of mine is Alabanza by Martina Spada, which I find to be a beautiful and incantatory ode to the people who were at the very top of the World Trade Center.
And Martina Spada is known as a poet of social purpose,
I think
would be one way to describe him. In your interest in September 11th poetry and the poems written before it and in response to it, you happened upon a poem by William J. Smith, a very well-known poet. He's been around for quite some time. He's probably pushing 90 at this point.
I think he's over 90.
He's
actually
over 90.
Yeah.
And it was published in 2003 in the Hudson Review. So tell us a little bit about this poem.
So this poem is called Invitation to Ground Zero, and it's a relatively brief and formal poem. And one thing that I like about it is all the repetitions that you can hear.
Mm-hmm. The beginning of the poem wasn't written about September 11th. It was constructed from different parts of Smith's life.
Exactly right. I had a wonderful interaction with him in which he clarified that the first line was based on a childhood memory that he had involving a scene of fire, that he had come up with the line years and years ago, and that he had perhaps been waiting his entire lifetime to write this poem about September 11th that was in some other way also about his own childhood memory.
Let's hear it. Here's Invitation to Ground Zero by William J. Smith.
Into the smoldering ruin now go down, and walk where once she walked, and breathe the air she breathed that final day on the burning stair, and follow her beyond the fleeing crowds, into the fire and through the climbing clouds. Into the smoldering ruin now go down, and find, in ashes bright as hammered tin, a buried bone-white naked mannequin that flung from some shop window serves to bind her body and its beauty to your mind.
So he's asking us to, even though we can't find the person who died in this catastrophe, we at least have a mannequin naked in the ruins to attach our memory to, at least something to attach
right
to the memory of this woman.
Right, exactly. So this is, in a way, a poem of consolation.
Mm.
You got something.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, it's the most terrible sort of consolation. You have a bone white naked, so there's a kind of sexuality there, mannequin.
Yeah.
And then it's flung from some shop window. So there's the image of people jumping from the World Trade Center, and more literally of destruction of the stores around the World Trade Center, which did happen.
But this is a very small bore poem. It's a very formal, it's only two stanzas, very
right.
brief. It's not a grandiloquent poem. And I think that may be account for a success in some way. It doesn't try to do too much.
I agree with you. And then I also think that one reason the poem is successful is that it does almost the opposite. It harnesses a kind of grand language. Into the smoldering ruin now go down. It's incredibly, it has an almost prophetic, mythic tone.
And he's drawing on the myth of Orpheus.
That's exactly right. Yeah, he's drawing on the myth of Orpheus following his lover into hell, which was, as we may remember, a failed mission, just as this will be a failed mission.
Mm. And walk where once she walked and breathe the air. She breathed that final day on the burning stair and follow her. Now, the air, as I remember, and I'm sure you remember, in New York was acrid for months.
Oh, yeah. Especially
September.
Down there.
And we did breathe the air.
Right. So another interesting contradiction in this poem is he's getting at the element of repetition that we all experience, the fact that we couldn't escape this experience, whether it was traumatic memories or disgusting air or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, no way are you going to breathe the same air that she breathed. That's not possible. She's gone.
And then what happened? And then the second stanza, he begins this incantation again. Into the smoldering ruin now go down. What is the second stanza doing?
When I look at the second stanza, I focus on that word bind, that the mannequin flung from some shop window serves to bind her body and its beauty to your mind. To my mind, the formality of this poem serves as a kind of binding, a poetic binding that attempts to compensate for the terrible rupture that the you of this poem has experienced. You have the binding of all the rhythms and the rhymes and the predictability of the twin stanzas, which each begin with the same line. And then there's a feeling that this binding is not the real binding that you're really looking for.
Speaking of the air of in the acrid air of September 11th, I worked in an office a couple of blocks from the World Trade Center, and the building had to be evacuated for several days, if not weeks. And when we got back in and started to work again, everything was fairly normal. The stench was in the air outside. But I remember about 3 months after September 11th, I opened a cabinet that hadn't been opened since that time. And the air, that stench of air was still in there, poured out of it.
Oh, God.
And that's what this poem sort of does to me. You know, it reminds me of the moment and the horrible incapacity to do anything and the smell the upset of that day.
It gives you a gust of the old air.
It gives me the gust of the old air from what it was during that time. And I think that's what a good poem can do.
Yeah, for sure.
Abby, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Abigail Deutsch is a writer living in New York. You can read articles and reviews by her, as well as an essay by Philip Metris about 9/11 and poetry, with links to some of the best 9/11 poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org. The excerpts of Adam Zagajewski's poem was taken from a recording of the poem read by David St. John. Ken Marks was the reader of Photograph from September 11th. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.